Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, July 8th, 2019, in a world where we now call it soccer and men's soccer. I would like to introduce my guests to you on this wonderful Monday. I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, happy post-holiday.
Yeah, everybody officially back in the grind. Also with me, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
My name is Alexander Hamilton. I'm back from vacation. I saw Hamilton. I was in New York City. Boom.
All right, Let's go. Let me try that again. Also with me today, I have Alexander Hamilton. Hi, Alexander.
Yes, my name is Brian Chaffin.
All right. At some point, I've got Andrew and another guy. We'll see if we can figure that out over the course of the program. The first thing I wanted to talk about today with you, Andrew, is Mozilla has this new feature that they're implementing in their browser, and it's making the UK kind of mad.
Yeah, so they're introducing I think it's the latest episode, or not episode, version of Firefox. They introduced this thing called DNS over HTTPS, which basically makes your browsing a bit more secure, and it prevents outsiders from trying to spy on what you're doing.
Well, it's full of drama, and so maybe it is an episode. We don't know.
Yeah. So the UK, there's this ISP association. They are declaring Mozilla a villain for 2019 for doing this. And they say it's because it blocks some of the filtering that the UK does and parental controls. And so they say it undermines internet safety standards in the UK. And I think they do have a small point, just because, like we were discussing, using this does have some side effects you might not be aware of. Mm-hmm. But to go and call them a villain, I think, is a bit much.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I hadn't really heard a lot about this feature until you wrote this article that said that the UK was mad about it. And so I thought, well, what is it they're mad about? And basically, what this is in concept, it's similar to if you use someone else's DNS server instead of your ISP, because you don't want Comcast or Time Warner or whoever to know what you're doing, right? You don't want to hand them all that data. So you use open DNS servers or things like that. If you're doing that sort of thing, you're already kind of doing this by making sure that your ISP doesn't have all that data. But you're also making sure that in this particular case, when they're doing this over HTTPS, the way it sounds, because I was looking, there's a nifty little cartoon that someone put together to introduce the idea how DNS things work and how the HTTPS part of that makes this a little more secure. So the interesting thing about it is that it keeps that traffic from being readable. So, for example, if Netflix requires you to be in the United States and you're using this and you're using Mozilla while you're doing that, Firefox to do while you're doing that, it may not work for you. Or if you have any other sort of geolocation requiring things or captive portal, like if you go get on the Starbucks Wi-Fi and the portal pops up and wants you to log in and accept or whatever, it can really mess with that sort of connection. To do the same thing. So that was a piece I thought was sort of interesting. I agree with you, Andrew, that going from zero to enemy is a little extreme. Brian, what's your take on this?
Well, there's two things. There's the technology, which has the potential to increase privacy for users, right? Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also the aspect of the UK being tense about it. And the United Kingdom has long been, or often been, probably long. Anyway, for a while now, the UK has been way, I don't know, I guess to the right of the US when it comes to the surveillance state.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not a surprise that they would be cranky about this sort of thing. I mean, this is the same country that has talked about banning end-to-end user encryption, talked about requiring companies like Apple or Google or whomever to, or Facebook, to give government a backdoor into end-to-end user encryption, making it completely worthless. This is also the company that has, or the country that has an enormous number of surveillance cameras. You know, London's got just like more surveillance cameras than I think anywhere, certainly anywhere in the so-called free world. So it's not really a surprise that they would be tense about this. Whether or not that will matter is another issue. Whether or not they can, you know, plug the hole in that particular dike with their fingers, I don't really think that they can. So yeah, I don't know. It's certainly an interesting technology. I would imagine that Mozilla doing this is going to lead to other instances of it being done in with other products and or platforms. So we will see.
Yeah.
I mean, you see a lot of that when you watch UK television shows. They always go to the CCTV at some point to get some vital piece of information for whatever it is that they're trying to do, and they're all over the city. You see a whole lot of surveillance there. So I'm not surprised this was the reaction from an organization in the UK. But I did think it was sort of funny that I don't know how much attention it was getting until somebody got mad about it. So, you know, on the one hand, like, yay, maybe it will get you around some sort of firewall that you believe is there unfairly or something like that, or possibly like parental controls or something. But also, it can mess with your Netflix, or if you're in the UK, BBC iPlayer. If it doesn't know that you're in the UK, I don't think it gives you access to the same stuff, because I don't get to see everything that friends of mine in the UK get to see. So there's certainly, it certainly at this point anyway, seems like something that could go either direction. And additionally, this isn't going to be like, now that it's a thing that's out there in the world that people are talking about that actually has an implementation, it's not like it's going to go away. So whether the UK likes it or not, it's out there. And it's not like they can get rid of it now. So it's the kind of thing that will be interesting to watch develop. Like, are they going to ban Firefox in the UK or something if this doesn't get pulled out of Firefox? And then what happens? So there's a lot of ways it could go. And if it gets, well, when it gets weird, we'll have to talk to Charlotte about it and see what kind of insight she can give to us as a person who's actually there. So I think it's going to end up being an interesting, at a minimum, it's going to be an interesting story to watch, right? So we'll see how it goes. So that I think, like, because the security of it is an interesting angle to keeping people from getting at your web traffic. And web traffic is a thing that gets mentioned a lot, along with, you know, giving data to Firefox, you know, having a Gmail address, stuff like that.
It's interesting things. There is a lot that goes along with knowing where you are. There's certainly stuff like, you know, the stuff that is not beneficial for the consumer, where you know, companies trying to control what movies we watch or what music we listen to because it benefits them. Right. Okay, fine. That's one aspect of it. But then there are other aspects of it. I know longtime listeners and readers of TMO will know that I've been doing Bitcoin faucets for a long time, and that I do a lot of the offer walls and stuff that are out there too, where you can take a survey and get paid for it, or you can, you know, do tasks simply like viewing a page or you know, answering a quiz about pages, all of which are really designed to bring up web pages and stuff. But those payments are largely based on where you are. How much you can earn is based on where you are. And if a company can't know where you are reliably, they won't pay for those kinds of tasks. So right, so that's like that's something that you're opting into. It's not like the controls that video or music companies might put on us, or that you know, that the, or like for Iran, you know, keeping their people from like accessing anything outside of Iran, or China actually controlling what kind of information can be searched for and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Those are bad sides of knowing where we are, mm-hmm. but there are actually good sides to knowing where we are too. There's even our own security things that benefit our personal security that would depend on the third parties that are interacting with knowing where we are. Mm-hmm. And this could have a negative effect on all of those things too.
Yes. And like I mentioned Netflix, but you know, another one is if you ever throw near me at the end of a web search because you're looking for something, if it doesn't know where you are, that doesn't get helpful anymore.
You're right. Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's all kinds of location stuff that benefits us as consumers.
Yeah.
And it could be negatively affected by technologies like this. So this is so not a black and white issue.
No, it really depends on your use case. But as an idea, keeping that DNS traffic private, there's now a reasonably, I would say, reliable way to do it through Mozilla. And remember, this is only Mozilla's or Firefox's web requests. This isn't if you are using Slack, for example, none of that DNS traffic is going to go through Firefox or anything like that. So, you know, that's the other thing to consider is like this is literally only web traffic. So all the other stuff that you're doing is going to go through those programs, which are all going to have the same, which are all going to have DNS information that might be readable by something else. So that's the other piece of it. Another story that came out that Andrew, you actually have tried is something in the betas from Apple about iCloud and how you can log into it.
Yeah, so right now this is only something that beta testers for iOS 13, iPadOS, and Catalina are seeing, where if you go to beta.icloud.com, which is, you know, where you find iCloud web apps, you can log in with biometrics, so Touch ID or Face ID. And, you know, this is good because biometrics is more secure over just your standard username and password. And I don't know anything else much about it, but this seems to me like it could be Apple preparing the way for sign-in with Apple, because that also uses biometrics. And they said they would be testing that sometime this summer. So it's some good news.
That's interesting. And I know, Brian, this makes you happy, because it means that you're not going to get the login prompt to allow you from the device that you're trying to use to log in.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, reality, right?
So this is a little more like official two-factor, something you know and something you have, you know, your face set up with Face ID. That seems like a pretty reliable login mechanism so far. I haven't heard anything. I've heard people having issues with adjusting, like people had issues with Touch ID when that first rolled out. You know, sometimes you had to delete one or two of the fingerprints and re-add them so that things would work like they should, or different little hitches like that. But I haven't heard anybody talking about how it's terrible or easily hackable or anything like that. I just see people using it and it's just a thing that people are doing. It's been, you know, two evolutions of iPhone since it came out, so it seems like it's pretty solid technology, which is pretty cool. And I'm glad to see mm-hmm. that so with the biometric, you're bypassing that little allow dialogue and enter the six digits, and then you can finally get into what you're trying to do, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that seems pretty cool. And is this in both betas, or is it just in one of them?
I'm assuming it's both. I had to charge my iPad, so I've only tested it on my iPhone, but I have seen screenshots of it on the iPad.
Okay.
And I don't have Catalina either, so.
Yes. And I will remind everybody that even the public betas, especially this year, seem to come pretty firmly from that part of the technology map that says there be dragons. So just be aware. It's still really early in the beta cycle, so it still may not be a good time to be installing this on your daily driver. Put it on an external partition, like we talked about with John, being able to install that read-only system volume because it does different stuff with your hard drive now. So you can boot from a separate volume and check that kind of stuff out. If you've seen it in Catalina and do want to confirm or deny that for us, we would love to know for certain. And you can do so by emailing us at observations@macobserver.com. You can get us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can even leave comments in the show notes. And I'm interested to find out if it's part of Catalina. I'm presuming it is. But I think this will be really nice, especially because sometimes if you're on your phone, you may or may not be near your other devices, right? Like, if I'm in front of my Mac, mm-hmm. odds are good I have my iPod or my phone nearby. But if I'm in front of my phone, I may not I probably don't have my computer, and I may not have my iPad. And so that second device is sometimes a little harder to come by if I'm trying to sign in if I were to try to sign into something new. So having a little bit of biometrics behind that would be pretty nice. So I think that would be good. So Brian, are you looking forward to having this instead of the pop-ups?
Yeah, it should be good. It should be an improvement, right?
That's my hope. Because that six-digit thing is kind of irritating.
It's my hope that it'll be a step forward. The current system is both, you know, good and flawed. So
yeah, it's better than nothing. I mean, like, we always talk about passwords. This is why we wanted to talk about it today, is because passwords and logging in and keeping your data secure is all really important. And being able to do this with something that is more secure than typing in a password or waiting to get texted, you know, a code or something like that is always a little bit better. So this is definitely a step up in that respect. Now, I know it's Face ID. Andrew, is it Touch ID as well?
Yep, because my iPhone doesn't have Face ID, so it works with Touch too.
Excellent. I only have Touch ID on my iPad, and I too have a mere mortal iPhone with home button, like a caveman. So I like it. So, you know, if I continue to have that because Apple can't tempt me into a new phone this fall, then I'm excited that I'll get to use it too. That was the thing I was sort of worried about when I read this. Like, a lot of the headlines talked about how you could use Face ID and not necessarily addressing that Touch ID was also an option. So I'm glad to hear that that works too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because then you're not limiting it to just people who bought an iPad or an iPhone in the last 12 to 18 months. So that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is definitely an upgrade. I like the idea of using something a lot more secure, particularly like with Face ID and Touch ID, being able to use the biometrics behind that in the secure enclave, which is some pretty solid stuff data wise to be able to log in. That definitely is safer and saves you having to put stuff together and, you know, remember a password or, you know, go dig it out of a password manager or something. Having that be even more convenient is also pretty nice. Now, I think, Andrew, you had a theory about this being tied to sign in with Apple?
Yeah, I already mentioned that. Apple says they're going to begin testing that later this summer. And, I mean, this is just an assumption on my part, but since sign in with Apple already uses or will use biometrics, maybe this is a sign that, you know, Apple is moving forward with that.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you sign in to Apple by using sign in with Apple? So mm-hmm. It's good to know they've got that set up. Yeah, that doesn't seem like rumor mongering on your part. That seems like a pretty, to me anyway, that seems like a pretty straight line to draw. How about you, Brian?
What's the question?
That they're setting up the biometric logins for iCloud so you can sign in to Apple services by using sign in with Apple.
Yeah, what's the question?
No, that doesn't sound, that's it, like, that's your answer. It doesn't sound ludicrous or weird or rumor mongering or anything to say something like that. Seems like a pretty straight line.
I think that it makes a lot of sense. I think that it's obvious and it'll be a step forward. So
yeah,
I'm gonna go ahead and just assume the positive, hopeful mantle.
Yes. What? Oh, it's because you're also pretending to be Alexander Hamilton today, right?
Yes.
I'm looking forward to this. It's one of the things we saw. I would like to get a look at the Mac Pro since we're talking like the stuff that we saw debuted at WWDC this year. I would like to see the Mac Pro just to have seen one. But the thing I'm really most excited to dig into and check out is the sign in with Apple stuff, because I think that's going to be really, really cool once it's implemented and people get a chance to really put some mileage on it. And I think it's going to be great. So I'm looking forward to it. And if this is a step down that road, then hooray. I think that's going to do it for us today. I want to thank both of you for being here. Andrew, thank you for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Brian, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good stuff. Good to be back.
Yes, I'm also glad you're back. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.